Hey friend, it's Stephanie Radcliffe, your host of the Stories Begin at Home podcast. I'm a homeschool mom of five from Florida, fixing up a charming 1950s home in the center of our city, adventuring with my wildlings and embracing a natural learning, living is learning lifestyle. I know firsthand the overwhelm and informational overload that we can find ourselves in these days regarding education and parenting choices. I created this space so we could inhale and exhale together. We'll chat all things homeschool, natural learning, gentle and respectful parenting, and faith-filled motherhood. But don't let any of those terms deter you. We don't judge a book by its cover over here, and all are welcome. Let's embrace our unique family stories and grow in confidence as we learn to trust ourselves and our children. So grab your coffee or tea, listen as you do dishes or change another load of laundry. Take a deep breath, grab a pen, literal or figurative, and let's rewrite freedom, joy, and connection in our homes and homeschools. All stories begin somewhere. Let's make ours begin at home. Man, friends, that was such a long break. I started this podcast right before we decided we'd be selling and moving to a different part of our city. I continued for as long as I could during that process, but had to drop this ball with all the others I had juggling for a good long while. We're now in our new-to-us home, a 1950s home that we're majorly renovating. We love it so much and are beyond thankful, but as you can imagine, with five kiddos and homeschooling and renovating, life is messy, chaotic, and beautiful. I'm finally picking back up the mic and publishing this amazing chat that I had with Amber O'Neill Johnston last year. It was such a joy and honor to chat with Amber. She's just one of those people that feel like instant friends when you talk to her. Her words are literally like sweet tea to the soul, which is fitting as one of my favorite curriculum packs from her is sweet tea and cookies. In our chat, we talk about her book, A Place of Belonging, celebrating diversity and kinship in the home and beyond. If you haven't already checked this book out, I honestly can't recommend it enough. It's one of those books I come back to reread different parts frequently because it's just such a hefty dose of good reminders as we raise our children to celebrate cultural heritage and embrace inclusivity. We talk about what it means to be an askable parent. I love Amber's hard questions phrase. We talk about this. We chat about Amber's amazing book list she offers to moms and the importance of curating a diverse selection of books and media choices in which children see themselves and people who are different. We chat about people being deeply rooted and what that means, what global citizenship is, inclusive communities, sacred spaces and places, and so much more. I've rambled on long enough about just how beautiful our chat was, so let me be quiet now and get right to it. And just so you know, you can find Amber's book basically anywhere books are sold. Let's get to our chat.
I'm super excited. I am going live today with Amber at Heritage Mom Blog. Oh my goodness, I can't talk. And I am so super excited to chat with her. Yay, she's here. And we're going to have such a blast chatting about her new book. And all things homeschool, diversity, kinship. I'm so excited. So I am gonna wait and see. Here we go. She is here. It always takes me 5,000 times for this button to work. And I am just waiting.
Hello. Hey! How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I love hearing you say it takes 5,000 times for the button to work because that was me. I kept clicking like request to join, request to join, request to join.
It does it every single time. And at first, like I joked, it was the humidity in Florida that it's like sticking. But now I don't really know if that's the reason, and it just still keeps doing it.
Oh my goodness. Well, good morning. So good to see you again.
Good morning. You too. I thought of you with my headband this morning.
Yes, because you know I love your headband.
And I'm cracking up because secret about the headband, this is my baby's headband. I was like, hey, it works. I'm trying to keep sliding back because it's actually too small.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny. Well, you can see, I'm not going to lie. I just took my sleep cap off. So this is what it is. This is where we're at today.
This is like my sleep cap. So let's be honest. I'm trying to pull up my notes so I don't
Totally just start rambling. Here we go. Okay,
I found the one. Hey, I love you too.
Thanks so much for joining. For those of you watching, we're super excited to chat today. And just like some little logistics here, we're gonna record this live. I'll post it in my feed as the video, and then in a few weeks I will edit it and it'll turn into our podcast video. I mean episode. It'll take a little bit just because I only upload every 2 weeks and there's a few ahead of this one, but it will be there. So I do that for my boundaries. I was like, okay, I'm only gonna do 2 a month because every week is not wise of me. So
I feel you on that.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know what? If I even need to back down to once a month, I'm gonna give myself permission. But twice a month right now is working great. So I'm super excited about that. So okay, well, Amber, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us where you live, about your kiddos. What made you start homeschooling? I had so much fun looking at your blog and your bio yesterday and all of that, so I have a little sneak peek, but I would love to hear more. And then of course what you do at Heritage Mom.
Yeah, sure. So Amber O'Neill Johnston and my husband Scott and I live outside of Atlanta, Georgia. In Georgia, everything's all about the county that you live in. I had never lived someplace that where the county was so important, but we live in Cobb County outside of Atlanta. We have 4 kiddos, and Nina, our oldest, is almost 13. Sasha is 11. Beckett is 9. And little Brooks is 6, almost 7.
I love it.
And we've been homeschooling from the beginning. And through Heritage Mom, what I do is I talk about all things homeschooling. So a lot of it's general, you know, as a semi-experienced homeschooler, I'm like in the middle now. Someone called me a mentor mom the other day, and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm excited or devastated. I was like, I don't think I'm quite there yet.
Oh, you're for sure there.
Thank you for that. So I especially though talk about the importance of diversity and inclusivity in our homeschooling curricula and resources and books and communities and all of that. I specifically talk about it from a place of all of us coming together rather than a place of, you know, division. And yeah. So I have a similar message to a lot of the things that people are hearing just in society in general, but I feel like the way that mine is presented is a little different than how we often hear it on the TV or on social media. So yeah. That's kind of what I do. I write and speak all across the country, and yeah, that's it. That's me.
I'm super excited for Wild and Free. I can't believe that it's so soon.
Yay, I can't wait. It's going to be such a good time.
Yes, yes, yes. Woohoo! Okay, cool. So you have a new book. I'm so excited. I have it right here. Sorry, I was putting my coffee down to grab a book here. How is it going? Tell me. I could talk all day about it. I highlighted a million things, and I feel like it's a book that like I need to just like keep pulling back out over and over again, especially as the kids like grow and different seasons go. I am looking at notes if people see my eyes wandering. okay, so first off, I love that you are not shy about talking about weighty conversations and needed conversations and tips that you give for parents. And I love how you talk about that. Yeah, it is about homeschool, but it's about home. And this applies for anybody and everybody. And I love that. And you talk about being an askable parent in your book. I would love to hear more from you about what that means.
Yeah, for me, it is the idea that I want my children to know that there's literally nothing that they can't ask me. And I had great, fabulous parents and all, but I was not coming to them when I had serious questions. I would get my questions answered elsewhere, usually by my peers. I also had an older sister, you know, and I want my kids to feel comfortable. Like, I want to be that first line of defense when you want to talk about something. And I think most often kids don't come to us if they feel that we're going to react negatively. So either that we're going to be upset, that we're, or that it's embarrassing for us or there for them. And so the idea of an askable parent is something that's usually part of talking to your kids about sex. And so that's where the term was first coined. And I just laid it over and said, well, not just about sex, but about anything.
Yeah.
So any thought you have that might be like politically incorrect elsewhere in our home, that term doesn't exist. You can ask anything. And so that has really helped me. My desire to be an askable parent has helped me with how I react to things and, you know, how I respond when my kids do say things that I wish they wouldn't sometimes.
Yes. And I forget, you said something in the book about how you have like a code phrase or something.
Yeah.
For them to wait.
Car question.
Car question.
Yeah. I actually just used that this week, as a matter of fact. So I told my kids we were about to meet a family where the children were adopted. And so they're a different race than the parents. Okay. And I don't feel like at this point my kids should have any questions about that. We have lots of friends, we have examples, but you never know. And I just have this one kid, there's always one. And I was like, listen, dude, we're about to go here. This is who we're going to meet. Here's what they look like. If you have any other further questions about this, when we get back in the car afterwards, you can ask me, but do not ask these children any questions about this your topic. And so, yeah, just training them that while there is no bad question and they can ask me anything, they can't ask me anywhere or anytime.
Right.
Because
I love that.
You have to consider the idea that other people have feelings and that they don't want to look like, feel like they're like somebody at a zoo that you're gawking at, or no one wants to overhear you. They don't want to see you pointing or your eyes looking out at whatever it may be.
Yes.
And so I sometimes look at them like, cause I see the same things they see. Right. So I kind of know when they're about to say something and I'm like, car question. And they know exactly what I mean. So it helps all of us. And most importantly, it preserves the dignity of whoever it is they may have questions about.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. And I think that just like having it in your mind, like, I feel like I need to write that on like my bathroom mirror, like be askable, just to remind myself, because I feel like in the throes of everyday life with like a million things going on, I don't mean to, of course, but like, it can just be easy to be like, in a minute, or, you know, like, hold on. And not that that's bad, we can hold our boundaries, but to also be like, but I want them to not feel like I'm off limits or their questions are off limits, and making the space for that. So important. Very cool. Okay. So one of your amazing resources, and I laugh so much because, guys, I'm not lying here. I feel like so many times I go to Google as my BFF and I type something and sure enough, Amber pops up somehow in some shape or form somewhere. And I'm like, oh, right. Of course she's spoken about this topic. And I love it. So I've joked with you about that before. But one of your amazing resources is obviously your book lists. And I know they've been such a gift in our home. And I'm so thankful for this perspective and your talk about life-giving books. And so I wanted you to talk a little bit more about what a life-giving book is, even if it's twaddle, as we know in the Charlotte Mason community. And so can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, basically, that's kind of where it originated, that all the book lists, if I can just be frank, all of the book lists that were proliferating around Charlotte Mason circles were 99.9% white. That's fine. They were good books, most of them, not all of them. But I was like, what the heck, man? And so when I first started introducing and suggesting some books that had Black and Brown characters in it, the Charlotte Mason police, they put on their uniforms and they were like, that's not a living book. That one there's not a living book. No, you can't do that. It's not a living book. I'm like, listen, girl, my first priority right now, I'm trying to get some black and brown in here. And these are great books. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, they're not classics, but a living book is not the same thing as a classic. A classic is a type of living book.
Right.
Living books can be other types of books as well. And so we're going back and forth and I'm like, okay, you win, right? I don't want to adulterate your term that you're misusing. So I'm going to make up my own term because then you can't tell me how to use it. So I don't know if this is a living book or not, but I recommend XYZ, and it is a life-giving book because it gave my children life. And that's where the idea came back. So it was it started as a bit of a clap back, like, well, it might not be living, but it's life giving. And so then I was like, you know what? I kind of like that. And so I decided that by coining my own terms for things, then it shuts down the naysayers who are trying to be super technical and missing the whole point. So there, because I'm just like, well, so you'll have this whole library and it's all these top-notch living books. They're all beautiful, but they're all white. And you're okay with that. Are you okay with that? And I'm like, because then when I'm suggesting these other books to add in, and they may not sound like the same books you already have. They may not look like the same books you already have, but they're really important books to have and to integrate in. And I just don't want us to get caught up by semantics and definitions. Yes. So that's kind of the idea. And sometimes, there are life-giving books that may have a lot of the same characteristics as what people call twaddle. And I'm like, but it serves a purpose, right? And also what some people have called twaddle have been things that allowed my children to feel like seen and valued. And then there are other books that other people love that I'm kind of like, I don't see anything in it. It looks like, it sounds like twaddle, looks like twaddle. Or it's just not good. I'm like, oh my gosh, everyone loves this book. And I read it and I'm like, but why? I feel like some of it is subjective as well, right? There are those books that we all agree are just awesome. But then there are books where to you and your family, maybe that isn't something. And then we have universal twaddle. I always use the example, you know, like Barbie goes bonkers, you know? Okay. Like we all know, right?
We can agree on that.
Yeah, we can all agree on that. But for me, I feel like, you know, one of the things I mentioned in my book is that, living a literary life doesn't mean that every single thing your kid reads has to be like Shakespeare. And when I was growing up, I loved books. And here I am as an adult making a living talking about books. Like I live a literary life, but I also read The Babysitter's Club.
You know? Yes.
So it's like, it's going to be okay, right?
Right.
It's going to be okay. And our kids sometimes just want Charlotte Mason said, when you're in the mood for an armchair, you know, they just sometimes just want an easy read that's just, you know, like
relaxing and absolutely
and fun for no reason.
Right.
I think that that's okay. So I'll get the Charlotte Mason police to pipe down over there and it'll all be okay.
We laugh so hard. Speaking of Barbie and writing, the first story that I ever wrote as a child was on an old Apple Mac computer, my dad's, and it was a Barbie story. And I wish I still had it to this day, but I just remember clunking that out.
Inspired you.
It did. It did. And now I also am a writer and I love it. And I love how that can be traced back to when we're kids. Like, so cool. Yeah. Yes, even if it's Barbie.
Even if it's Barbie.
Well, I love, and oh, and by the way, obviously, anybody listening, you can hear way more about how to diversify your home library and more tips about life-giving books in Amber's book. She goes in such amazing detail and asks such thought-provoking questions for us to be able to do that in our homes. So I love in your book about how you talk about being deeply rooted and creating a family culture and history. And I really loved the quote, take the reins and lead your children down a path of discovery through family projects, not as an assignment, but as a way of life. I just loved that because so much we can get in the groove for school projects or unit study projects, and those aren't bad by any means. But when we look at it as a way of life. Like our projects are a way of life. I feel like that is a huge mind shift. And so let's talk about this and then some ideas you have for establishing this in our homes.
Yeah, I think the whole family projects as a way of life thing, it takes the pressure off because the last thing any of us need is another thing to add to our to-do list.
Yes.
So if you start thinking of like, okay, now we got to do like culturally affirming projects. Like, and when I say culturally affirming, it could be ethnic culture, but I also in the book really spend a lot of time talking about family culture.
Right? Yeah.
It's affirming of your family culture and rooting your child to their home. If we start thinking of it like another thing we have to do on top of all the other things we have to do. But when you think like, I have my child's entire childhood to like weave these things in really slowly, like as they come. So some examples would be like a family recipe book.
Yes.
And it's like, if you think of it as like a to-do list, you'll be like, okay, this term we're going to make a family recipe book. We got to do it. Come on, kids. You're write the recipe down, take a picture, call your grandma, write it, you know, get it, capture it. And we're going to put it all here. We're going to put it in a book and make it think about like, my goal is to like, have this, like something like a family treasure by the end of my kid's childhood. And then I might even as a grandma still be adding to it, you know, like that this is something that doesn't really ever end. We just always do it. Then it's like, if you add one recipe every 6 months,
right?
Great. You know what I mean? It's like, you're just drizzling.
Right.
I love that. I got to use that term again.
Yeah.
You're just drizzling things, right?
Yes.
I want that. I really want these things to be natural. I cannot handle one more thing. I'm doing all the things right now. And so when I think of it being natural, little drizzles of things that we do as we go about our normal life, it became doable. And after a while, I started realizing, you know, this is like a thing. Like our family does this and I wanted to tell other people about it. So the recipe book is just one example. Another example would be like a family commonplace book. I just finished talking to somebody else about commonplacing. So, you know, with a Charlotte Mason education, we often, with our older kids or the moms might have a commonplace book and we try to get our older ones to get into it in the teens. But before my kids were even old enough to do that by themselves, we had like a family commonplace book. Sadly, ours got left in the airport. So we are starting over. Yeah. And I did cry with real tears. But it had years of things, but like quotes that we liked, little passages from books, favorite recipes, just all these things that we kind of wanted to just keep track of. So that's another example. So these are small things. They're not big deals, but the things that I like, you end up with an artifact that your family owns and is just your own. It won't be something that anyone else in the world owns or has. And the process of creating that artifact over the years roots your child to their place and home.
Yes. I love that. I love that. I love the inside jokes and how like nobody else is going to get it, but I really need to do that because I can just see my kids like totally getting really into that and be like, oh, we need to write that in the book.
Yes. And they do. And I mean, it does create family jokes. It's like my kids, like the ongoing joke, like when I make stuff for the kids for breakfast and everything for my family, I make everything from scratch, right?
Yeah.
Flour, sugar, all the stuff. And my husband, like when he makes pancakes for the kids, he uses Aunt Jemima Complete, where you just add water. Totally fine. No shame. But the kids love his pancakes, right? And so they're like always, so when my daughter was like, we should add pancakes to our family recipe book. And we were talking about it. And she was like, but not your recipe, daddy's recipe. And I was like, okay, here are the steps. Buy Aunt Jemima Complete. And I guess it's a different name now. But and then add water. Those are the instructions. And I was like, that's shameful, shameful. So, I mean, it does, it's funny. And these little experiences are just, opportunities to bond. And that is part of, that's part of having an inclusive life of living inclusively. And I think a lot of people were surprised that so much of my book is dealing with family life and home. And they're like, well, what does that have to do with living inclusively? And my whole point is that children who feel a deep sense of belonging and that rootedness within who they are and the family in which they belong, the place where they live and their lives, those are the type of children who have the capacity, the emotional capacity, the emotional intelligence and the desire to form bonds with other people.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where that idea is. It's a twofer, right? Like, yeah. So your child's growing closer to their family, but also then has the capacity to grow closer to other people.
Yeah. I love that. So true. So true. And that's so funny about the recipes, because we have a very similar thing. They always ask for dad's waffles because they're way more unhealthier.
Of course.
I try to use like
maple syrup. Yeah.
Instead of sugar, and he's on sugar. I'm like, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, guys. Okay, so again, more Charlotte Mason quotes here. But in your book, I'm looking it up because it's a little long, so I'm just gonna read it from the book. So you say, Hold on, sorry. I'm gonna go ahead and read a Charlotte Mason quote from your book. So Charlotte Mason borrows a quote from F.D. Maurice. So she writes that family is the unit of the nation. And then Charlotte Mason writes that as it is the part of the nation to maintain wider relationships, to be in touch with all the world, to be ever in advance and the great march of human progress, so is this the attitude which is incumbent on each unit of the nation, each family as an integral part of the whole. And she goes on, but basically this leads you to talk about global citizenship and what that means. So let's discuss that. What is global citizenship? Why is it important? How do we go about this? It sounds so like royal.
Yeah, you know, right? I'm a citizen of the world. I think, you know, in the simplest term is the idea that you are helping your child to see that they are so important, so valued, so loved, just a treasure, and so is everyone else. And I think that's the part B that we kind of can sometimes miss out on. And so letting our children know that you have a responsibility to, yes, this family, but also to this community, and absolutely to our nation. But not just that, you have a responsibility to all of mankind across this world, and that borders are good for a lot of different reasons at times, but that your responsibility as a person, as an individual, to connect to the humanity of other people has no borders.
Yes.
So it's a balance, because people are often like, well, what about the whole, you know, you're teaching them not to love their country? Like, what about the fact they're American? And I'm just like, oh, please, that's baloney. Like, why are you dismissing children as being so simple that they can't hold two things at the same time? So I want you to love your place where you are from, while also understanding that other people can love their country.
Right.
And we can still connect with other people while loving who we are at the same time. It doesn't have to be an either or thing. So that's kind of, you know, that idea of global citizenship helps Scott and I make decisions about what we're going to do with the kids. Like, when we're not sure, or when we're looking to head a direction, we're like, we go back to that idea, that as like our compass, like, how does that impact what we're trying to do and how we want them to see themselves in the world?
Yeah. I love that. And then you go on in your book to talk about how that, like you said, how that helps you make decisions. And that's how you've been inspired to world school, right? Yeah. And travel. And I love how, especially as a mom of five, with eight and under and a baby, I love your practical tips in the book about like ways you can make travel feasible and budget friendly and like all of that. So I love that. At first it can seem daunting sometimes, and I love that you just like bring that down and how you talk about making it a priority. That was very encouraging to me. So very cool. Okay, so let's move on, because we still, I like kept typing up questions. I couldn't stop. So I love the chapter about sacred spaces and places, and how your oldest daughter forced you on this path of colorful living. The way you're in tune to her and the way you write about it and observed her and went to bat for her and your family, and are now paving the way and encouraging other families to raise socially conscious children. It's so exciting. And I love the quote in your book where you say that you saw that it was crystal clear that mere exposure to Black people was a solve for her pain, referencing your daughter. And you talk about why you first started the Heritage Homeschoolers group and the importance of space, of safe spaces. Sorry. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I didn't, I mean, it's funny now, right? People looking at me would be like, oh, Heritage Mom didn't realize this. But at the time my oldest was young, I didn't really understand how much she needed to be around other Black people at times. And the reason I didn't understand that is because I didn't have it. And so I didn't recognize my own needs there. I knew that some things weren't right, like growing up, but I didn't know that that was what it was that was missing. I didn't know what was missing. I just felt uncomfortable or out of place and never thought of a solution. But me watching her as an adult and seeing, hearing the things that she was saying, and there were so many misconceptions that she had, that things that just weren't true, that she believed about Black people and therefore that she believed about herself. She felt like her skin wasn't pretty, her hair wasn't right. She felt like she would make comments about like Black people have not done anything worth studying, like, you know, and things like that, that we hadn't really made contributions that were important enough that we had studied in, you know, our education and our curriculum. We study artists and musicians and composers and poets and all of this literature, and, you know, rightfully so, she's like, oh, well, hey, we haven't even done anything worth talking about during school hours. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And, you know, try to put on like this full court press to try to change everything. But one of the things that made me realize is like things like her hair. The reason that she thought her hair was so gross, because nobody else had hair like that. So you feel like you're an alien. And you know, you're the only little girl in all of Atlanta, you know, I know that seems impossible. People are like, how could you be in Atlanta and not be around Black people? I said, we live in Cobb County. That's not Atlanta. We live far out into the county, and we homeschool. Homeschool is a totally different world than the rest of, you know, the community. So I started this group, and my goal was to get like five families. I thought, well, if we get five other families, we could do field trips together, park dates. And we weren't quitting. We didn't quit ever. We never quit our white group. I hate to call it that, but yeah, we were the only Black family there. So we never quit that group. It wasn't like something was wrong with it. They're still some of my closest friends now. It's that we needed more. And started this group. And here we are now, almost 6 years later, with 100 families.
Wow.
So it was not just something that my child needed. I'll realize that that is just, every child needs some space where they feel like I'm the norm here.
Yeah.
I don't have to explain, or everyone here understands this aspect of who I am.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what led us to it. And it's been an amazing blessing. It's been so amazing that I feel in my life that it's a miracle.
Aww,
so, I'm always thanking God for that.
That is amazing. I love that it's 100 families, like, in that short amount of time.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So cool. Sorry, my computer did something weird. Okay, so I feel like something happened and I lost my place, but oh well. Well, okay. So this kind of repeats back and kind of sums everything up a little bit. But kind of going back to like things being feeling daunting to try to like add more, and we don't want to feel that way, but making it more a way of life, and things like that. You say that the vision that you casted for your family has developed over time. And the progress wasn't linear. It was full of ups and downs and periods of stagnancy, while you adjusted to this new normal. You tell families in the book that your journey will be different, and in some cases radically different. And that's what makes it so liberating. So let's talk a little bit about that, and kind of, wrap up, just like the different things we've been talking about. I have a long quote here, that I loved. I won't read the whole thing, but you just talk about how there's just a lot of different ways that we can weave color and inclusivity into the fabric of our lives. And it's not going to look, the same. It's not going to look linear. But that every parent possesses, I loved this part, a special sauce that can be imitated but never perfectly duplicated, because the main ingredient is you.
Yeah. Well, I think that for me, as I was writing this, and whenever I'm writing or sharing, I am always conscious of the idea that the biggest pitfall I fell into was copying what other people were doing.
Yeah.
That's what hurt my daughter, right? Like, that's why she didn't see herself, because what I was using and the books and the resources and even the wall, the art on our walls and everything, none of it reflected her or me or who we were, because I wasn't being thoughtful about any of it. I was copying. And now I was copying people I admired.
Right.
It's normal that you would, you know, well, hey, this is great for her, so let me do that same thing. And so I always want to make sure that I'm telling people, like, copy my ideas if you're inspired by them, but not the exact way that I do it, because then you will be perpetuating in your home the same thing I did in mine. So you have to do it your way. Like, you yeah. have to be like, what speaks to you? What is your special sauce, right? We're all different. And you know how your, like, I think about my mom and my aunts, like, they knew exactly how to fix their man's plate, right? Like, my mom could fix my dad's plate like nobody's business, and it'd be just right. And I always wondered at that, like, I don't want anyone to fix my plate. How do you know, like, what I want next to it? Like, even Thanksgiving, my mom would fix the plate. Her sisters would all fix their husband's plates.
Yeah. And
people that might be, they might be like, oh, that's so old fashioned, but there wasn't this like expectation. They liked doing it. And I just always was amazed at that. And to me, I want to be that person. Now, I don't fix my husband's plate yet, but we haven't been married 50 years, but I'm going to get, but I want to know my family so intimately that I can season up their food for them, you know? Yeah. And that could be their literary food or their music or the other things, because I know what they need.
Yeah.
And so I think every woman, as the head of her house in that regard, right,
yeah.
head homemaker in that home, should do it the way her family needs it done. So that's kind of where that idea came from. And you know, I think I want people to feel like I can give you ideas, but you actually are the expert of your kids.
I love that. I think that's such an important message, because I can totally fall in. As I'm still new at homeschooling, this is only our third year. And, I mean, we started from the beginning. My oldest went to preschool, but then after that, it's so easy. You want to be, you get inspired, and you want, and then you try to go implement it exactly the way. And then you're like, wait a minute, that's not working. And then, you know, you can start to feel that insecurity or like all of that. And I know, speaking for us, we have neurodivergences going on in our home. And so when I would try to copy a certain framework, a lot of times it was not working. and it's like you said, like, inspiration and ideas are great, but we have to observe and figure out what's best for our families. And I think that kind of goes back. I mean, even like, the whole like premise of your book, how you followed your daughter, like the whole, like you observed your daughter, and our kids have so much to tell us if we listen. Oh my word.
They really do. And I mean, I'm still mind blown after all these years at how much our current home life it is rooted in the information that she gave me years ago. Like she didn't have all of the vocabulary for it, but she was basically like, listen, sis, what you're doing is not good enough, and I'm gonna need you to step up your game. And here are some ideas, you know what I mean? And I'm like, okay, this little kid is like letting me know that I need to get it together in certain areas. And I did, and it worked. And I'm like, wow, this I would have never known if she hadn't told me.
Right.
So, the way she said it sometimes was painful, right? Because I had to watch her pain in order for that mama bear instinct to kick in, where you're like, do anything, you don't care, you'll do anything to fix it. And so, yeah, I think it's amazing that our kids can give us that type of immediate feedback if we're willing to listen.
Yeah. And I think like you said, like it's hard to see that pain, and it's hard to see what, strong opinions sometimes they're throwing out, but listening to it and getting to the root is, like you said, like just life changing. So that's so exciting. Well, before we go, I'm gonna make sure we talk about for our listeners where we can find you and where we can find your book and where we can find your site. So it's Heritage Mom Blog, and that's on Instagram and your website. And then you have links for your book there on Amazon and like everywhere, right? Like
Yeah, all the places, Barnes and Noble, Walmart, Target, ChristianBooks.com, wherever you buy books, it should be there.
Okay, very cool. Well, I will make sure that I link all of that in our show notes and on our post and all of that. But thank you so much for taking the time to do this. It was so much fun. I could talk all day
I know.
about homeschool and all of this stuff. So
Okay. That's wonderful. I look forward to giving you a big hug when I see you in.
yes! I can't, like I said, I can't believe it's like only in 3 weeks. That's insane. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, wonderful. I'll see you then, and I'll talk to you later. Thank
All right.
you.
Bye. Thank
Bye.
you.